Talk 580 KMJ presents Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes here on News Talk 580 KMJ and KMJNow.com. We have the whole hour today with Len Ross. And if you're a golfer or if you're from the Fresno area, that name is probably jumping out at you. We are going to hear about a really incredible life for a young man from Fresno originally who's going to be 90 in August. He and his wife, Vel, will celebrate their 68th anniversary this coming November. But maybe what you didn't know about Len Ross was he was a Marine in the Pacific during World War II. And how did he go from that to being really the godfather of junior golf in Northern California? And I'm sitting in his office surrounded by pictures of Len with people like Tiger Woods and Arnold Palmer, Johnny Miller, Peter Jacobson. It's a who's who of the world of golf, and they all have wonderful things to say about Len Ross, and you're going to get a little inkling of why they have those great things to say today as we visit with Len. Now, let's go way back, Len. I understand that your love for golf started long before you were a Marine. You grew up in Fresno, and you did a little caddying around these parts?
Yeah, and when I started so young that I was run off by the older fellows from caddying, and so I had to work my position up to getting in there and being a caddy, and that's how it started, as being a caddy.
Now, what would you get paid for caddying? I guess this would be in the late 1920s, early 30s, right around the Depression time. Would you get a nickel for 18 holes?
Oh, much more than that.
Yeah.
I got 50 cents for 18. And if we're lucky, a 25-cent tip, man, I'd come running home with that and give it all to my mother. And things were tough, just like they're getting now.
But the purses on the PGA Tour are a little higher than what Bobby Jones and Walter Hagen were making back then. So you moved away from Fresno. You went to high school in Santa Cruz. And in Santa Cruz is where you met this young lady who, come November, you're going to celebrate 68 years of marriage with?
Yes, and I met her when I was running around the track. I saw this little couch potato over there, and beautiful. She still is, as you can see. And yeah, have a lot of love for her.
I can tell, and I can tell the feeling is mutual. Now, tell me, I ask every veteran this question, and everyone who listens to this show every week knows this, and they wait for this question, about December 7th, 1941. What do you remember about the day the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor? Where were you, and how'd you find out?
I was here in Fresno, and I was going to school, and I told my mother that, and I'd go into college, so I had all the needed requirements to go to officer's training, but and everything was fine, but my mother was from Germany. That didn't go well. My father was from Italy, so... I ended up in the Marine Corps, which was not a bad situation.
Once a Marine, always a Marine, they say. But what you're hinting at with your father's heritage and your mother's heritage, them being from Germany and Italy, they weren't going to send you to the European theater because they couldn't vouch for your allegiances, right?
I don't know what the answer was. That's all I remember. I had everything ready, and that was something along there, some way it didn't work out, so the next best thing was the Marines to me.
Now, was that a pretty easy transition for you in the Marine Corps, or was that a rude awakening once you got to training with these guys? And I'm sure most of your trainers were some of the old breed of Marines who'd been around before the war and wanted to make you tough in a hurry, right?
Oh, was it? I'll tell you, this was a rude awakening. That was the era when the Marines were very selective and just the turnover to where they were getting people like me coming in there. But it was one of the greatest learning tools that I've had in my whole life, in patience and being tenacious and all those words that, like it says, once a Marine, always a Marine.
Now, you decided before you shipped overseas, and you're with the 1st Marine Division, which landed on Guadalcanal in July of 42, but I guess you got married before you left, right?
I sure did. And now there are a lot of 1st Marine Divisions, and I mean of units went over. And I wasn't the first to go. There are many that were ahead of me, but that was the first taste of the South Pacific was Guadalcanal.
But you got married before you left, so I'm curious, how hard was that for you? You have this high school sweetheart, you marry her, and then you're going off, and you don't know if you're coming back, and there's a pretty good chance you might not come back.
Well, she really married me because she was after my, what was it, $24? No, it was a mutual agreement. We were in love, and I just want to make sure I didn't lose her before I went overseas and somebody else grabbed this beautiful girl.
And I imagine that gave you a reason to survive, right? And a reason to want to come home.
There were a lot of people that had it tougher than I did. But you never forget what those conditions were, and you did the very best you could do. And I just want to make it clear also, the Japanese were doing what they had to do. And I have that letter that I gave you goes way, way back from a Japanese prisoner.
We're going to get that whole story about the prisoner and the ever-present reminder you have in your front yard that reminds you of that story. Tell me if you can. I know you don't want to get into too many details about all your time in the Marines, and we're going to talk about what you've done since then, which I think is the big story here today. But I'm sure there were days where you had that picture of Vel tucked away, but whatever you were up against that day from the Japanese or the weather or the conditions made you wonder, maybe I'm not going to wake up tomorrow. What kept you going through all that? And do you remember some close calls that you experienced that really stand out?
I'll just talk about the funny things that I think are. I never wanted to sleep in a tent that was on the perimeter. You can figure that one out. And some of the conditions in the first day, we'd sleep on the top of the hill, and it would pour, and it was so rainy that we would be sliding from that position a few feet farther on down, and so tired that you almost slept through all of that in the evenings. And at the daytime, we were doing the things that every good Marine has to do.
And, of course, everyone knows the Marine Corps motto, Semper Fi, short for Semper Fidelis, which means always faithful, and that's something that you've obviously modeled in your life since then. But what was the relationship you had with your fellow Marines? I imagine there was a great deal of trust and mutual respect there. Can you give us a sense of what that brotherhood was like in the Pacific during World War II?
Pretty easy. You could always count on the one next to you in throughout the whole Marine tour that they'd always be there for you and you would be there for them. There are many good things that you remember that fellow Marines, and I hope I'm not using the term too often about the Marines, but these are things that the rest of the services did it likewise.
Well, no question. And now you were with the Marines long enough to make 5 landings in the Pacific. Do I have that right?
I was on 5 different beaches. That doesn't mean you go in.
You weren't the first wave 5 times, but you were. Tell us the different battles that you were present at with the Marine Corps.
Well, I have to go back because I really try to forget them. I was on Guadalcanal. But that was after the first push, because then they kept piling up in there. And Guam, Saipan, Peleliu, and there was others that...
Right after Saipan was Tinian, and as you're clearing the way for the bombers.
Yeah, and these were... I wasn't always the first push on things. I was there. Some of them I came later to these islands, but I was on all of these different islands, but... There were many that had it a lot tougher than I did.
And just to put that in perspective for our listeners, when you talk about that, and you mentioned you weren't in on the initial stages of the battle for Guadalcanal, but 650 Americans were killed there. On Peleliu, more than 1,200 Americans were killed. Tinian, more than 300. And on Saipan, there were close to 3,000 American troops who were killed. And I imagine... It was just as likely that you could have been one of those killed. Do you ever look back and say, I'm really fortunate? And how did I survive all of this that so many did not?
No, I try not to look back. Try to look forward. I mentioned that. I look forward to coming home. And there are so many other Marines that had it tougher than I did. Some of my endeavors were duck soup, I mean, compared to some of the others. So... The biggest problem I ever had was missing those that are were here in the United States, especially that one over there, meaning my wife. So, as I told you, I don't want this to be any glamorous thing that I did, because it wasn't. It was just whatever everybody was doing, every Marine was doing his chair, along with the Army and the Navy. And
that hits on, you know, this show is certainly not about glamorizing war. And what I say every week is that the purpose of this show is first to honor veterans for serving and for the sacrifices that they made, to preserve their stories so the rest of us know what happened and what price was paid for our freedom, and hopefully to inspire the rest of us to live up to that legacy. And your story is certainly inspiring. I have a feeling that the way you describe looking forward and not looking back and looking for the positive has a lot to do with everything you've accomplished in the last 7 decades since you first became a Marine. But we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll hear about the situation with the Japanese prisoner and how that relates to something in Len's front yard. Len Ross of Fresno, our guest today. We're going to talk plenty of golf when we come back. It's Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.
This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty on 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Len Ross, my guest today. I mentioned you could call him the godfather of junior golf in Northern California, and that's not an exaggeration. This coming week, and I always try to make this show timely as well as looking back into history, and this coming week, starting Monday at some of the best golf courses around Fresno, it is the Len Ross Junior Golf Tournament that started way back in 1947. You can find information on that at lenross.com. I've got that linked on our website at kmjnow.com. It'll run Monday through Thursday this coming week. And if you go out to that tournament, I want to make sure that you know to go up to Len and shake his hand and thank him for serving our country when we needed him, and for serving our valley and the sport of golf for so long. You're going to hear the love that he has for that sport. But before we get to that, I want to get through this time period of World War II, where if he didn't come home from World War II, we never would have had the Len Ross Junior Golf Tournament or the Junior Golf Association of Northern California, which he founded with some help a few years back. So many things would not quite be the same, and your front yard would look a little different, too. Let's explain that. On the island of Guam in World War II, you're there with the Marine Corps, and how did you and the guys you were with come to take some Japanese soldiers prisoner? Explain what you can about that to me.
These particular prisoners, I don't know the name, type of ship it was, but it was a ship that was coming in and had been hit, and they just kept coming right on in, and you never know what was going to happen. And I recall at the time just speaking out, and we got past the point of anybody getting hurt.
You talk about got past the point of anybody getting hurt. I imagine when that is developing, you're still kind of leery, because there were plenty of situations where Japanese soldiers would pretend to be dead or want to be captured and then detonate a grenade or try to take a few Marines with them. Was that a tender moment as you guys captured these prisoners?
That's a pretty tender moment under any condition, whoever it might be, that you don't have very long to blast out and say, hold up, you know, and they were having it bad enough. So at any rate, we kept in touch where they were put, and they would come out and work.
You kept in touch, and he was paying attention to you, because when you guys captured him, you had treated him with respect. And I think this is a big point to hit for our audience, because we talk so much on this program about the war and how intense it was. And in some people's minds, it's a big game out there where these guys are shooting these guys, but there's a human element to this. And you looked at this Japanese soldier, and clearly you had compassion, and you didn't try to kill him. You could have.
No, and with the killing aside, there wasn't any mention of that. It was just to hold up and use common sense, and as soon as things straightened out, they got taken in where they belonged, rather. And as you read in the letter, that he was home and he's having a great life, and he was able to live a life.
Let me read a section of that letter just for our listeners. Now, this is a Japanese soldier who was taken prisoner by the group of Marines that Len was with. And Len is hesitant to say too much about himself and to pat himself on the back. So let me let you hear this from the Japanese prisoner. He writes this letter. He says, "It has been 4 years since we have said goodbye, and it has gone by like a dream. After we said goodbye, I vowed to write, so please excuse me for not writing sooner. When we were on Guam, you treated me as if I were a member of your own family. I will not forget that for the rest of my living days. And he continues to go on to ask about Len's family, and he continues to say, after parting with you, I was able to return to my home safely, thanks to the United States of America. Fortunately, the wife and children are safe and healthy. And he talks about the life that he's trying to make, and he makes it clear that it seems to me, as I understand this letter, that he feels like he owes some of that opportunity to you and the way that you treated him as when he was your prisoner.
Yeah, and that was just a quick exchange. Nothing happened to him at the time, and he got home, and he has his family, and he raised how many? I don't know what it said there. How many did he say, seven?
I didn't see a number in that letter, but what was it for you that allowed you to look at him in that light and to see another human being with a family who you needed to have compassion on other than the enemy of Imperial Japan that was trying to conquer the world?
Well, whatever they were after, they didn't get.
Thanks to you guys.
Thanks to all of those service people, all the different branches. And it was, war is not pleasant. I made a good friendship here with a prisoner. That's the main part of, here's a prisoner. And we were still in contact for some time. I think this relates it all. He went on and had a life, and I had a life, and everybody was happy for a number of years.
And this is another one of those moments where I say, what would have been different if you were one of the Marines killed, or if, obviously for him, if he were, instead of taking prisoner, if he would have been killed, if he would have, as so many Japanese did, commit harikiri, he wouldn't have been writing you this letter. And I teased this aspect of the story. Your front lawn would look a little different. Tell me about how surprised you were when you had some visitors and they said, we're related to this Japanese prisoner that you treated well all these years ago in World War II, and they left you a reminder. Tell us about that.
Those are pleasant things. The other gets out of hand sometime, but this is proof of the pudding, that they said they had something here that they had told them to do, and they did it. And in my front yard, we have these beautiful trees that we planted. There are five of them. And it isn't just trees out there. It's a reminder of how people should treat each other, even under bad, horrible conditions. And this is proof of it. And so it's a happy thought to always come home to my house, our house, I should say. The boss isn't here right now, so...
Well, and Vel would tell you that they're Japanese pine trees, and there's five of them, and I'll go ahead and take a picture of them and put them on our website at kmjnow.com so the rest of you can see what Len sees when he comes home every day and is reminded, as he just said so eloquently, how people should treat each other, whether there's a war going on or not. And I know we've got plenty of time where we're going to talk about golf here. The other thing that hits me is it must have been pretty special for you after surviving all these battles in the Pacific, and your unit received presidential unit citations, and there were guys left and right getting all these decorations. But you survived. That was the big thing. And you got to come home to your beautiful wife. So what I want to know is, what was that like when you finally got to get out of a war zone and come back home to the wife you left behind in America?
That was the happiest day of my life, you know, sitting and waiting there in the San Diego hotel, waiting for her, and as I told you, in this haunched over overcoat, the ugliest looking guy you ever saw.
Well, and we'll explain that to our listeners here. You had been in the Pacific, where tropical weather, it's hot, 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 hot. You come back to San Diego, where the rest of us would love to be, yeah. But for you, it was freezing cold, so you're shivering in an overcoat while she's enjoying the sunshine. And I guess it took you, what, a few days, a few weeks to acclimate?
Yeah, to acclimate, to be acclimatized.
How would you describe that feeling? Was it relief to be back home with the life that you wanted to have, knowing that freedom had been preserved and this enemy had been defeated? What did that feel like? What did that mean to you?
Back home with the ones you love, and the being in the United States. There's no better place to live than the United States of America, in my mind. And the Japanese felt the same about their homes. So, and when I saw my wife after about close to 2.5 years or whatever it was. It was like looking at a doll baby, you know, just sweet. So that was one of the happiest days of my life.
Yet I hear you were the one with the baby face.
Yeah.
You even started smoking cigars to try to refute that rumor?
That's what the Japanese would look at the baby. If you look at that picture, and it tells you. And I have to would say the same thing, look at that baby face. And and that's where I figure, well, I'll be a tough, get to be a tougher Marine. I'll put a cigar in my mouth and light it up. Anyway, that's where I don't smoke cigars now. Maybe I smoke 3 a year, that would be.
But that's where it originated. Yeah. MacArthur had his corncob pipe and Babyface Ross had his cigar. Len, is there anything else before we move on and talk about everything you've done since the war? And I think that is of such significance to this program today. And I think people will really be touched by it. But I want to give you the chance. I know I'm sitting here in your office, as I described, the brains behind this operation for more than 60 years of the Len Ross Jr. Golf Classic. And all these pictures around the wall of famous golfers and famous people you've encountered. There's also, in a spot of great prominence, the insignia of the United States Marine Corps. What did it mean to you to be a Marine? And is there anything you want to share about the men that you served with that made you proud to be a Marine that you think people ought to know about what Marines were like in World War II?
Neat, clean, dependable, and their word was their bond, and we cared about what happened to others, not just ourselves, and I think that's the best way you can describe living.
And it's clear that you've carried those principles on in your life. Do you think that your life would have the focus and the purpose that it's had if you had not been in the Marine Corps?
I don't know. I'd have to ask my wife. I'll tell you one thing. As you noted in the house and everything else, dressing each day clean, neat, but keeping, never forget what was behind you and where you are at this point in your life. And I hate to tell you how old I'll be in a couple of months.
90 in August, right?
Oh, gee, yeah. Yeah. I must have been, that must have been one of my weak spots. I let it out. But in all of this, that it's many, many people, and I'm just one part of it, along with many millions of people that have done the same thing. And I'm not a hero, and I'm not any of this thing that might be looked at toward me, because it's not, it's just things that everybody did and were called on to do at a time. And that's what America is built from and is about.
Well, and I think it's that perspective and that humility that makes so many people enjoy working with you. And you said people don't work for you, they work with you. And it's that perspective that makes you a leader that they like to follow and serve with. And we're going to talk about some of these great ideas that started with you and have grown and grown over the last few years. Right now, we're going to take just a little break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about all the things Len did after World War II. He went back to school at Fresno State, but that was just the beginning. Remember the Len Ross Junior Golf Tournament coming up this coming Monday through Thursday at courses like Riverside and Fig Garden and Airways. And if you're out there, make sure you go thank Len for serving. This is Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.
On the front line of freedom, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Len Ross is our guest today, and don't forget his golf tournament that he's been doing every year since 1947 is coming up this coming Monday through Thursday. Not every year? You missed a year?
No, but along with many more people besides Len Ross, I couldn't do it without them.
Absolutely, and that is one thing Len is very concerned about. He does not want to make himself out to be a hero. He's never done any of this for accolades. He does it to serve people, and I think that's what we appreciate so much about his story. But in the commercial break, we were reminded by your wife of nearly 68 years, Vel, that there was something else you got out of the Marine Corps that you've passed on to your two sons, and that has to do with what your feet look like when you walk out of the house?
Yeah, that my shoes are always shined, and they the sun reflects right into my eyes from the shoes. But that's the core, and that's not bad. I can talk about that.
Well, we certainly enjoyed some of the stories of Len Ross's time in the Marine Corps, and he chooses not to reflect on the harsh realities of war, but looks for the positives, like that Japanese prisoner that we heard about, and those trees that are still in his yard to remind him of the kindness that was exchanged between those two men on opposite sides of the war in the Pacific. After the war, he came home. He got to see his beautiful bride again, and then he went to school at Fresno State. GI Bill helped out with that. And you got back to that game you love, golf. Is it right that you were on the first lettered golf team at Fresno State and you were the team captain?
That's correct. And we weren't the greatest, believe me, but we sure had a lot of fun. And we played the game the way it was supposed to be played. And we were the older folks at that time. The young kids kind of looked to see what we were going to do because we were maybe 4 or 5 years older now because of the core. So this made a lot of difference, and most of the team was made up by guys the age of my age, and we had a lot of fun.
Well, it's a good way to play some free golf, right?
Yeah, it was, and it almost had to be because we didn't have any money. If they would have asked for money, we'd been in trouble.
So before there was Mike Watney or Tim Norris or Kevin Sutherland or Nick Watney, there was Len Ross and the Bulldogs way back in the late 40s.
Right, but these people that you're talking about were then my juniors. We have the people like Whitey Becknell and myself, and there were six, but we were all, with the exception of about four on the team, we were made up of veterans, and it was a fun time.
And it was during this time, 1947, that you got this idea, speaking of juniors, we need to have a golf tournament in Fresno for juniors. Where did that idea come from? And did you ever imagine in 1947 that tournament would become what it is today?
To answer the first question, that I had friends like Walt McConlog, the names mean nothing to except people like myself, Charlie Culver, and many others who were my age. We just got talking, and that something had to be done to keep the game going, and that we needed some adult supervision and rules along with the rules that are already written. So we've taken off in by leaps and bounds to in Fresno here for our Junior Golf Association. Then we have our state, in which there are many, many names that we'll create in that. We founded that also. I think that's where things originate. You go from one step and you learn to take a step before you walk, and then you can get into running when you've accomplish those things that came before it. So we're there now, and there are many people that have taken over and will move, step back a little, which I'm trying to do now, and keep the game of golf alive. And through the game of golf, you learn all the things, honesty, integrity, fair play, blah, blah, blah. And that if you don't follow the rules, you're penalized like you were in the Marine Corps, but not as harsh.
The drill sergeants are a little nicer on the golf course. And you hit on this right there, and I get the sense that that was a big part of your vision right off the bat, that you saw some parallels in this game. And I think, in my mind, it's not too different from something else that was going on at the Fresno State campus at the time. In 1948, a coach named Pete Biden came there, and his hallmark was the fundamentals of the game. You have to embrace the game, play the game the way it's designed to be played, and in that, you learn a lot of lessons in life. We've got Bulldog Baseball later tonight on this station, and that legacy lives on, but I get the sense that that was what you were after, not just to go out there and have fun on the golf course, but to impart some life lessons through a game that could be fun. Am I getting that right?
That's correct, and you transgress by following rules and by doing the things that make it better for the game and for those that come after you. So that's what it, those are the things, and that's not bad.
And over the years, and I think what, and I try not to preach on this program, but I think everybody has a choice in their mind if they would rather be famous or significant. And I think in your life, in the golf world, you're definitely both, but it's clear that you wanted to touch lives and you wanted to do whatever you could to impact people and young people. Is there something when you look back and you look around this room and the biggest names in golf are on your wall, is there something that you're most proud of that maybe someone came up and talked to you and said, thanks for doing this, because of you, this and this and this? Are there some moments like that stand out in your mind?
Oh, most definitely. But I always stop them right there and say, it isn't me, it's a we. And that's how you developed. If you have a spear, you've got to have a sharp point. And that's all these people that are coming after, along with that sharpness and making it even a little bit better. So, yes, I think it has come a long way, and that we have come a long way. And I'm proud of the people I have met, and I hope to meet many more.
Tell our listeners, just I know you're not in this to name drop, but I think our listeners will be interested in all the years, more than six decades of your tournament, drawing kids from all over California. Who are some of the names that stick out, big names in golf, that have played in your tournament right here in the San Joaquin Valley?
Johnny Miller, we just talked about. Bobby Clampett.
You've got a letter on your wall where Johnny Miller says you were like a father to him. That's got to mean something to you.
Yeah, I hope so. I've met so many nice people. Like, the thing is, you see them on the wall here, there must be 20 or 30 that have contributed. And
for every big name that jumps out at you, and for every Tiger Woods or Natalie Gulbis or Roger Maltby, there's 100 other kids that played in your tournament, right?
Well, and just to give you an example, after we started out with maybe 20 or 30 kids, our next tournament we have, 200, Val? Now we have boys and girls, and we have six flights, and they go from 7 to not having reached the 18th birthday, and we use about 4 courses a day. And the courses, I have to give so much thanks to, they appreciate what makes better children and better young people by being a part and contributing. And golf, as I say, does so much in rules. It's just a bundle of rules in golf, but they're not hard. They just must be followed to make the game equal for everyone.
Now, if you're at home, you're listening, you say, I got to get my kid in that tournament. It's too late for this year. The registration deadline has passed. But if you want to get involved for next year, you certainly can. And go to our website, kmjnow.com, where I have links and information about the tournament and more about Len as well. Now, that's one of your legacies, is this tournament that is going to have your name on it long after you're gone, whether you like it or not. I know you'd like to get everyone else's name on there and probably rotate it year to year. But the other thing that you have, with all this help, have put together in Fresno is the Junior Golf Learning Center. Now, I'm sure that's something that you dreamed about for a long time, to actually have brick and mortar in a spot with an area where kids could come and learn the game for free, because that's one of the issues with golf over the years has been access, and it costs money. And you've got a situation there where they can learn about the game and have a chance to swing clubs and not have to pay any money. What did that take to put together, and what does it mean to you now that it's there?
Well, first off, along with those nice things that you said, is if they go through the program, in the training program, and they do an average job, they get a set of clubs, balls, bags, and all the other little incidental things that go with it, no charge. And that is where we bring in the community. And what I get from the community is they send in the clubs that they've outgrown or a little, and we cut them down, and golf balls and bags and any golf-related materials. Golf balls, there's just tons of them. Have you been to the site?
I was there the day that you opened it up, and I can still remember the smile on your face and how proud you were of it. And I'm listening to you here, and it occurs to me a few of our listeners may have an old set of clubs, and they're thinking I might get $25 at a garage sale for them, or $50 or whatever, but they could bring them to you guys and help a child learn the game of golf. Do I have that straight? Is it that simple?
We're in pretty good shape with clubs now, but there's nothing that says, see, we're a nonprofit deal, and there's nothing that says, hey, if they wanted to throw in $25 or $50 or some of these people that you, the Clampets, have done a lot of things. I could go through many of them that have had contributed a few dollars and help us out. It does cost money no matter what you do. To build the site cost, it's a beautiful site, and bought the land, and you've seen it, and I think you'd agree it's a nice-looking place.
It's great. It's on South Thielman near Chandler Airport, and all the information is on our website at kmjnow.com about that Junior Golf Learning Center. And I know this has only been within the last decade that that's become a reality, and you're not about the numbers and how many kids have been helped, but I imagine your vision for that and for what it could mean to the community and to young people goes way into the future, long after you're gone. What is your hope for that Junior Golf Learning Center? What do you want it to mean? What's its significance?
Well, all the good things. The only bad thing you can do on a golf course is shank or
I'm pretty good at those.
Yeah. Or hit it left or right or all those little things. But is master the game of golf, which teaches the good fundamentals of the mind working the way it should be, and you're going to find yourself a better person. It's learn to control temper, and you're reading about one of my youngsters now. Profanity, and things of this nature, and throwing clubs, but these are related to, that relates to life. Golf is a game of just those things. Think about the person that you're playing with, have respect for what they're doing, and be gracious, and it's all connected to good living, and I think if you do those things, it's pretty easy.
Well, it sounds pretty easy, but it's often harder to do than to hear it said, but you have led by example for all these many years. We're going to take our final break, but when we come back, some more thoughts from Len Ross on the game that he loves, the life that he's led and continues to lead as a powerful example for all of us. Len Ross is our guest today. Go online and check out information about his tournament on our website, kmjnow.com, and we'll be right back with the rest of Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Now, more Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. We have a few minutes left with Len Ross, who has served the Central Valley and golfers all over the place for so many years. And this was all after he made it home from the war, which was a first key accomplishment. If he did not make it home from World War II, none of these things we're talking about with the Junior Golf Association of Northern California or his golf tournament, which is this coming Monday through Thursday. More information on that online at kmjnow.com. None of it ever would have materialized. Len wants to emphasize he does not see himself as a hero. He was one of more than 16 million Americans who served their country in uniform during World War II, with the whole country back home supporting them as well. But Len, one of the things that I know is powerful to you, as we sit in your office and the pictures of some of golf's greats on the walls, you also have a few letters around the room. And I know you don't want to say great things about yourself, but some of these people in their letters make it clear what your efforts have meant. You talked about wanting to pass on values to young people through the game of golf. Read to me, if you can, this first letter. It's from Bruce Lewis, who was managing the Del Monte course. A lot of people who know the Pebble Beach area know that's one of the fine golf courses in Monterey. And read for me, if you can, Len, what he had to say to you.
Well, it's just a little letter that means a lot because it goes back a way. And this is from Bruce Lewis, and this is what it says. Mr. and Mrs. Ross, it sure has been nice visiting with you at the awards dinner. I would like to thank both of you personally for what you have done for me and other juniors throughout the years. During your award presentation, it struck me how they always mention the great players from your junior program. There are far more juniors of lesser playing ability you have made great impacts on, and a number of great players. I remember you talking to my dad into allowing me to continue to play in your tournament, even though I was not as good as my cousin. In fact, I was so bad that making the cut was not always possible for me. Both of you shared your love for me just like you did for the many good players. You helped develop me into the person I am today. I was hired for my last three jobs because of what I had that could not be taught: honesty and character. My golf game has never decided a job for me, but how I conduct myself on and off the course did. This is from one of my early junior golfers, maybe 40 or so years back, Brucey Lewis.
What does that mean to you, Len?
It means a great deal that they have, in my mind, that they have been successful to pick up the things that makes life worth living. Here's one here from Johnny Miller. This one is, he had sent to me in 1995. In all the years I've been involved in golf, and especially junior golf, I've never met a man who has dedicated his life more to perpetuating the betterment of junior golf than Len Ross. He has been like a father to me and a father to so many of the juniors. He has given himself totally to the game and totally to the young people who pass through his area. I've gotten to know him and love him and really appreciate all that he's done. Quite frankly, he's a truly amazing man. It's my honor to know Len Ross, signed by Johnny Miller, one of the greats of the game.
U.S. Open champion, absolutely. So, and I know the first letter that you read from someone most of us have never heard of means just as much as that one that you just read from Johnny Miller.
You picked that up just right, because they are as important, and I think of them as much as, and as at least as much as I do of the other letters, and there are many, many more on the wall, as you can see. But they're a reminder to me of what has happened, what is perpetuated, and what is still going on and will be carried on long after I'm gone.
Well, and I guess that's the question a lot of folks probably at home are wanting to know the answer to. You're going to be 90 in August. How long are you going to keep doing this? How long are you going to keep going out to all these golf courses every year with all these kids who you could be their great-grandpa?
My wife asks me the same question, and but I have a good team of people behind me, and I'm not the wheel, I'm part of the wheel, and they believe and have the same thoughts that I do as far as children and what we need to do to make the life just a little more fuller than it might be.
Well, and I think that's why you've touched so many lives over the years, just by having that approach and that perspective. Len, is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners, and any reason that you'd like to give them for going out to support your golf tournament next week?
No, I think that I'd love to have you come out there and just observe the rules that we have set up for those that do come out. And any time that anybody feels that they would like to help, besides just donating golf balls or clubs, there's nothing that says they can't send a little monetary remittance our way, and doesn't have to be much, but we would appreciate that.
I have a feeling some of the people that have been listening will be so moved. And if you would like more information on Len's tournament next week, not his tournament he wants to point out, but all the people that are putting it on, that tournament or the Junior Golf Association of Northern California that he helped to found so many years ago, or the Junior Golf Learning Center, which will be a monument to his dedication and love for the sport for years and years to come. Go to our website, kmjnow.com, to look all of that up. Len, on behalf of all the people listening, and I think I can speak for him, I just want to say thank you for serving our country, and for, after coming back to the San Joaquin Valley, serving so many young people who now aren't so young anymore, and the young ones still coming through. I think it's clear to everyone listening that that your life has been a true reflection of that Marine Corps motto, Semper Fidelis. Thank you very much for all your service.
And that means Semper Fidelis, always faithful and to any cause that there is. And this is what we try to teach children and have them perpetuate. Thank you.
Thank you. That's Len Ross. He's been our guest today. Thanks for listening to Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.